Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
All right, Chris, love to have you. I look forward to this all month long, having you in the studio because...
That's generous.
No, that's 100%.
How terrible is your life that this is a highlight?
Pretty bad. But nonetheless, thank you for coming in.
You bet.
I want to get started off with things you hate. Those are the stories I love the best because
really?
Misery loves company.
Yeah.
And so you're good company.
Well, and I have a large capacity for hate.
It's I get frustrated.
Insatiable.
Yes. I get frustrated at the little things.
Yeah.
I take it upon myself to sweat the small stuff.
Well, at some point, if you don't sweat the small stuff, then it's the sweating of the small stuff that leads to great improvements.
Yes. Society should thank people like us.
Yes.
Don't let those small things go.
I can't have this anymore. My dad always gives us a Christmas gift, all of us brothers, a Christmas gift that's some strange, oddball thing that you would never think of, but that is useful in some way. But he never tells us what it is. You have to guess. He takes the packaging off and everything. You have to guess what it is. And so one year he gave us you clip it to your air conditioning vent in your car and it holds the chicken nugget sauce in your car. So
how
somebody,
do you find that, man?
Right? But somebody was sweating the small stuff about I'm eating chicken nuggets and I'm driving, but then I've got to set the dipping sauce on my console, which is potentially
that's
a disaster. And somebody thought, well, if I could just have something hold the dip for me, now I'm free to drive and dip. So there you go. There's somebody who was sweating the small stuff and greatly improved my life. My driving and chicken nugget experience has reached new levels of ease.
The challenge I run into in Arizona, especially in the summertime, is you need all the vent you can get. So if I have a nugget sauce blocking that, like you go to Walmart and you see these beautiful, clever phone holders that clip to the vents. I'm like, that would be so fantastic.
Yeah.
It's so convenient. Not in Arizona.
No. Well, you're cutting off. You're blocking all
that. Yeah, you're like, I got my phone, though. That's good.
But it's the small stuff. So yesterday I was driving back. I had to take my wife to the airport in San Diego. I was driving back. And they have a portion of I-8 that's down to one lane when you're coming back. And so they have the merge sign, you know, and they give you like a mile's notice, you know, to start getting over. And what I hate is when people don't... It's a zipper. You're supposed to let someone in. They let you by. Then you let someone in. They let you by. And then no one has to stop. The idea is that you wouldn't have to stop if everyone zippered into the lane.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't. There's always somebody who sees the left lane's backed way up. The right lane's wide open. I'm going to go ahead. And then I'm going to nose in wherever I can, which causes the left lane to stop to let this person in. And so now the left lane stopped.
Yeah.
So now we're stopped because you couldn't zipper.
Yeah.
You know,
rules don't
apply. Frustrating.
Rules don't apply to you.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a societal structure that we're all trying to get somewhere and we should all help each other. But when you're in that lane, you feel like you own that. As your territory.
Absolutely.
You're going. Like, so listen, when somebody zips ahead.
And the problem is, though, you've got to like be riding the brake the whole time and on the bumper of the car in front of you. Otherwise, the person that's zipping ahead is going to squeeze in.
Yeah. Or if you leave any kind of gap at all, that's
they'll start putting their nose in and start and like, you know, are you going to hit me or are you going to let me in type thing?
Yeah, but when you're in that lane, you're also doing the same thing. You're like, oh, there's a little space. I'm getting that.
Absolutely.
And then they're like, oh, man, I didn't close the gap enough.
That's right. So if you have a car with adaptive cruise.
Oh, yeah. I hate that.
I can't imagine life. You hate it?
In my mind, I'm thinking I hate it when people. I'm minding my own business in my lane, and then they come and they get in front of me just enough to make my sensor.
Your car stops.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
No, adaptive cruise is a game changer.
But when you're in stop and go traffic, ours anyway will work to where you don't have to do anything.
Yeah, it just goes like that.
Maintains the pace of the car in front of you, but it leaves too much of a gap.
Exactly right.
And so people will ease.
They need to make the sensor, because you can turn down the sensor as to how far you want that distance to be. You got to do, I'm in a traffic jam and I don't want.
Close the gap.
Yeah. No jerk zone.
Yeah. No jerk zone. I want to prevent an unlicensed zipper.
Yes.
Approach. But yeah, it's, so I hate that. Hit every red light. Once I got back into town, I hit every red light. We need another freeway access other than
we do.
Through town.
Yeah.
100%.
Over by Cocopaw.
Yeah. If Avenue D went through, life changing.
Yeah, that'd be
20 minutes each way. Mm-hmm. That's 40 minutes.
Yeah.
That means you can be from your house to the beach 20 minutes sooner. Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
Yeah.
But we don't have
it. I agree with that.
But if we didn't sweat that kind of stuff, nothing would happen.
We have nothing to talk about.
Yeah. We'd all still just be living in caves.
Exactly. So there's a couple of things I wanted to bring up in this discussion. One is education in general. As a parent, one of the things that I strive, I think, is probably the most important character that I can instill in my children is accountability. And oftentimes that's done through chores or getting a job as young as possible. My kids have cleaned the office. They've maintained landscaping. It's their job to get it done. And even when they're in sports and they get home late from a travel game, hey, you know, did you figure out somebody else to cover your shift? Or are you going to come in at 6 o'clock in the morning and clean it? Because you got to get it cleaned up and done. And then they go to school and it seems like what they learn is how to avoid accountability. For example, how to get around the requirements to get to certain grade, how to beg the teacher, what can I do to get extra credit so I can get the same grade I want to get without doing what you laid out originally as the requirements. And then you get further on with higher education and student debt. And the idea is, well, there should be debt forgiveness now for these student loans because they're so overwhelming and they're burdening us down. And yeah, the amount that the universities charge is one subject in and of itself that I really don't want to get into. But the question is accountability. If nothing else, the university should teach students to plan ahead, determine in a budget whether or not they can put together a plan that's going to be successful and that they can afford, and then ultimately be accountable for whatever plan they put together. And so the forgiveness of student loans is the absolute antithesis of what they should be learning at school, whatever subject they study.
Well, it's everything has a cost, and that includes education. We can argue that the cost is overblown or you know, we can, that, like you say, that's a whole another argument, but there is a cost.
Yeah.
And so when you buy things, whether it's full price at the time of sale, or you put it on credit or a loan, you still bought it and you're still responsible for it. So I grew up, you know, being taught that when you commit to something, you finish it out, you do that. If you're going to take money, you pay it back. Just seems basic. I don't know why that mentality only applies to education.
Oh,
why not home loan forgiveness or credit card auto loan forgiveness? You know, oh, well, I really shouldn't have bought that car, so I should be forgiven. And let's be real, it's nobody's forgiving anything. It's just being paid
by somebody else.
By somebody else.
Right.
So I think that's what's so frustrating. I remember the day growing up when my dad wrote his last student loan check. I remember that being a big deal in the house. You know, and I was little, I didn't even know what a student loan was, but I knew that was a big deal. You know, when my dad announced to the family that he'd written his last student loan check, you know, and I know friends and people my age that are still writing those checks.
Yeah.
You know, well, what about them?
It took me 10 years to pay it off. I paid it off in 2018. I graduated in 2008. And 10 years, it was the biggest payment that we had. It was bigger than our house payment. It was bigger than our car payment. And other than actually the business payment that I purchased into, it was the biggest payment that we had. And when we paid that off, it was like, wow, that was a huge monkey on our back. And it made me realize a couple of things. I could have been a lot smarter going in. Mm-hmm. I just felt like if I get into law school, then I'll just go to the best law school that I can get into and has the best statistics for placement into a high earning job. And I won't look at actually how much money I'm borrowing and how I'm going to pay that off. And that was a 10-year lesson that was a bitter pill to swallow. And when people ask me, what recommendations do you have if I want to get into a law practice, or what type of law do you think I should go into? I say, okay, well, whatever you go into, think of this first. What school can you afford? Look at the different schools out there and think about how you can afford it. Because the law is the means to an end. It's a means to provide for your family and to provide a fulfilling career. But at the end of the day, you've got to pay for that education. So don't put that at the end of the list of your order of priorities of things to consider. You need to put it at the beginning of your list and say, okay, based on what I can afford, now what am I going to pursue? And yes, there are some unknowns and some variables and miracles happen that allow you to afford things that you otherwise didn't think you could. And I'm sitting in a position here today that I didn't think I ever could have been, given that I grew up in a family that wasn't going to be able to pay for my education for me. But I still would have chosen a different school that either had some more grant options or a lower tuition, or I could, based on my academic prowess, I could have gotten some scholarships. Instead, I just went to the best school that I could possibly squeak into and get very little scholarships.
Do you think that made a difference? Like, had you gone to a less prestigious law program, less expensive law program, you could still be right here today?
I think that education today goes against the general rule that you get what you pay for. And with education today, the Ivy League schools, I think, are the most watered down and obsolete types of education that you could possibly get. In the technical volitions, institutions like welding, plumbing, a specific electrician, specific skill set, I think those are far undersold. And what you pay for them is far less than what you get back.
Yeah, my daughter is in digital arts. She's in a digital arts program in Utah. But when we were exploring that, she could have gotten the same training and digital arts education at the U of A. And her plan was to always go to the U of A. And we sat down one day and wrote out, you know, what it would cost, the other classes you need to take, when her goal ultimately is digital arts. So she want, you know, you need to know those programs, versus going to a dedicated, almost like a vocational school that can teach her the same skills. She'll come out with the same level of qualifications to get the job that she ultimately wants for a 10th or less of the cost and a third of the time.
Yeah.
You know, and so we wrote all that out, and I didn't have to, she looked at the spreadsheet herself and said, why in the world would I go and spend that when I can still get where I want to go spending so much less? Like you got here, you probably didn't know you'd be purchasing into this practice or anything. I didn't know where I'd be practicing. I think part of it is, you look at the big guys and you look at the big city and you look at those big things and you think you need to go to a big school, and it's not. And in reality, a lot of us end up working in a small town, you know, doing a job that, you know, is based on our character and relationships and things. And very few actually go and do those huge jobs that require just the most prestigious law degree or those kinds of things. Those are out there. Going back to how, when we learn more about things and how maybe it changes our perspective on them, one of the silver linings of the cost of those bigger schools is that the smaller schools become a much more attractive option. So AWC and NAU Yuma and U of A Yuma have fantastic programs.
ASU as well.
Okay.
You forgot
the word for it.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
But they have fantastic program improvements, new degrees that you can get right here in town, and all of that's born out of that necessity of how do we get an education that's less expensive, that's more accessible, that isn't such a daunting obstacle to get to. You know, and so one of the benefits of that is you can do that at a smaller school and still have the fantastic career life that you want, you know. So that's one of the benefits, I guess.
Do you get the sense that because the loan is between me and the government, I don't take it as serious? You know, kind of like we meet with a lot of clients that they'll say something, they're planning for their death, and they'll say something like, oh, I loaned my son $20,000.
Yeah.
Well, you expect to get that back? No. We talked about paying it back, but we're probably not going to get it back. Well, what do you want us to do about that? Oh, just forgive it. Forgive it when we die. So we'll do that in the legal planning. I feel like that's kind of how we treat government loans or school loans. It's like mom and dad. It's like, well, I'm taking out a loan, but you know, I'm not going to pay it back, right? It's like, I'm just considering this a gift.
Well, and that's
I think,
isn't the advice never loan money to family?
Exactly right.
Because they don't see it. You don't see it with the same respect.
It's my money.
You see it.
In essence, you know, it's like you're giving me my money back and you're probably misspending my money. So I really don't feel bad if I don't pay you back.
Right. Right. Or then it builds resentment. Hey, I saw you bought this or that. Meanwhile, you owe me.
Right.
This money.
Yeah.
So what's going on? You know?
Yeah. You've got that cloud over your head. You borrow from your father-in-law or your mom or your dad. And, then every car or purchase that you make, they're thinking, they still owe me some money, but they can afford that nice car.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah. So but there are careers that require a college education, a degree and those types of things. And so I think my advice to my kids is, well, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? I don't think if you don't know what you want to do and you're going to college to explore what you want to do, I don't know that I would recommend that.
I'm okay with community college.
Yeah.
I'm doing
college
that.
Is great.
I think that's where you figure it out.
Yeah.
Cheaper.
Exactly. If you don't know what you want to do, go to community college.
Yeah.
That's what community college is for. Cause it is specifically designed to allow you to work and experience life and to get some different variety of what areas of study are out there. You may not know that you actually like astronomy, right? You may not know that you like biology as much as you did because your biology teacher in high school was boring, or you at least didn't have the attention span to figure it out. And now you're like, wow, I really do like biology. And because I like biology, maybe I do like medicine a little bit more. And I thought I'd never be a doctor because I got poor grades in high school, but that has nothing to do with the brain development that you have now in community college, whereas you're not working up any debt, or you shouldn't be as you're going through community college. You should be able to pay for it as you go.
Well, it's designed that way, and it's at a price point where you can explore.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to law school and you get into law school and you take the loans for law school and you get 2 years in and you realize you hate this, well, now what?
Yeah.
Now you're committed. You know, but community college, you can take a semester of, you know, three different things and realize, hey, you know, I love automotive. I didn't even realize I loved automotive so much. So I'm going to get into that. And so I think it's great. When I grew up, it was very much the mentality, you went to high school, you graduate, you immediately go to college. You know, there's no break, anything like that. And I don't know, I've softened quite a bit on that. I think I would encourage some exploration between high school and college.
I
just for all the reasons we talked
agree.
About.
And I did that just because I was a poor student in high school and not that academically inclined after high school. In fact, if anybody asked what I was going to do, my answer was always, I don't know, but it's not going to involve any more school.
Right.
Because I'm done with school.
Right.
And I didn't know that schooling can be actually fun. It can be fun to learn. It can be very rewarding. And especially once you decide and your brain matures enough that you're gonna put your heart and soul into it, then you start to love it. But if you're just doing it just to get by and it's a drudgery, then you're probably not going to enjoy the career path that it's leading to.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I have a 17, this has come like to the forefront of my mind these last few weeks because
you're in the trenches.
I am in the trenches. Yeah. You've been through it. So you're well seasoned, but I'm not. So I'm a dad of a 17-year-old who graduates in 2 weeks. And so now I'm like, oh boy, now what for him, you know, like how's that going to pan out and things like that. He doesn't seem to be as worried. And I'm like, okay.
You've given him worried, a safe place. Worried. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You've given him a safe yeah, environment too.
So what I did was, like I always do, I turned to AI, the all-knowing.
Yeah, sure.
You know, that's first awesome. AI, and then I'll ask God, you know, in prayer, but right. Start with AI.
And then your wife after
and
that.
Then my wife.
Right.
No, but I had him take a personality test, a Briggs-Myers personality test.
Yeah, you've been really big on these lately.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. So anyway, I had him take this test and then I gave it to AI. I'm like, hey, this kid's graduating. Like, here's his personality. What would he enjoy doing? What would he be successful at? What could he make $1 million at within the next 10 years?
Arms dealer.
Yeah. That's what I said. Drug smuggler.
Yeah,
exactly.
No. And then it spit out like all this stuff. And what's really interesting was like, it's already, I could see that is his person. Like I could see why it was giving me these answers or these suggestions, because it does pan out as to what I've seen over his lifetime, just the tendencies that he has and things like that. And he's already kind of set himself on that path of like entrepreneurship, you know, kind of stuff. So,
how so?
Last summer he and a buddy started a business, power washing business, going door to door.
What were they power washing?
Anything. You need it.
Trash
cleaned.
Cans, driveway.
Trash cans is the main one, and then driveways. Exactly. Okay. Right. Yeah.
See, that's impressive to me. It's not glorious, but it's a need. Your trash cans get stinky, and you're willing to do that. I don't even care if my trash cans need it. Of course, they always do. But even if they didn't, it's like somebody shows up to the door and they say they're gonna clean my trash can for $30. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, you're getting $30.
Yeah, so they went out and did that. And so you learn those, he learned those things. What happened when you go out on your own? He had to purchase a power washer. How are you going to get the money for that? Mom and dad. So we'll lend you the money to get that, you know, seed money. And then when you would go, they would go, it's like, well, we've got trash in our trash can. So, but come back, you know, at this time. So they started to learn, oh, in these neighborhoods, this is when trash day in is. So we need to come the day they empty trash and then we'll ask them. So you start to get these vibes and making appointments instead of just like springing it on people. So
that's so interesting because it just gave me an epiphany of something that was said by Thomas Sowell, the great economist, that said communist governments and socialistic governments don't work because the people at the top aren't brilliant. Although oftentimes they are self-serving and greedy and authoritarian. But even if they were brilliant, there's nobody that's brilliant enough to go to all the different things, the changing needs in a society, and switch the workers to those needs. Because there's 1,000 changes every single day. And there's no one administration that could understand that. Like your kids understanding garbage day needs to coincide with trash cleaning day. That can't be done from the top down. That has to be done from the bottom up. And that's why capitalism, or putting the power in the hands of the people to figure out what the needs are, and then those needs evolve and develop every day, works, is because no one organization can be flexible, mobile, and transform quick enough to be as efficient as 1 million people doing it all at once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think, so to get to your question, that's what I saw manifest when he did this little business, if you will. And I knew it was going to be hard. I knew he wasn't going to be successful, but I wanted that to happen. I wanted him to taste that early. because his plans are to go on a church mission, a service mission. And from my own experience, 2 years of my life, I was knocking on doors and being rejected. So I wanted him to feel that so he would get ready for it and be able to.
But your high school dating scene prepped you for that.
My high school. Yeah, no, no, it was the opposite.
No, never rejected.
Not in my life.
Okay. Dang it, I guess I'm just projecting here.
Well, who knows?
That's another podcast.
I don't know what's going to come, but yeah, I'm in. Sean knocks this Briggs-Myers personality thing.
No, I haven't taken it. I want to. I need to.
But he's got a chip on his shoulder.
Well, because I have taken
one
before.
I'm not
going to
tell the story.
Tell the story.
I'm not going to tell the story. This is your story to tell if you want to tell it. I'm not going to tell it. But I recently brought this up. I'm like, because we're in the stage of hiring. We need a couple helpers to hire. And I was like, you know what we ought to do? Make them take a personality test. And he's like, fine. You know, he's grumbling about it. And the reason why, in my opinion, is because he thinks I'm like, your personality is going to peg you to this, that, or the other. I don't feel that way, first and foremost. I understand it's not perfect. But at the same time, I'm not looking at it to say, okay, this person needs to go in this position because they can handle this, that, or the other. Or this person can go into this one because they're perfect for that job. That's what the personality said. That's not what I'm looking at. I'm looking at it as, are they going to be happy in that role over time? Mm. And given their personality and what AI is telling me, in this particular role, probably not. Like, they can probably do it, then they'll do it fine and they'll do it well for a little bit. But after time, they're going to be disgruntled, which will cause other issues.
A happier worker is a more productive worker.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so we might as well just cut to the chase and put them where they might be happy, you know, over time.
Well, and it comes with maturity. The other thing I would encourage a little bit of some introspection before you run off to college is, I lost my train of thought. Take your time.
Well,
we'll come back to it.
Well, it comes with maturity that you're working in order, work as a tool.
Mm-hmm.
To get the things that you really want in life.
Yeah.
And so
sometimes you get lucky to work in something you really enjoy.
Right. But there's a lot of people that aren't working in what they ever thought they'd be working at, but they're doing it. They're doing it well. They're having a great life outside of work. But that comes with maturity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one ever says, I want to be a power washer when I grow up. But if that power washing company turns into a real business that generates a lot of income, that gives them a lot of satisfaction, gives them financial freedom to go and travel and buy toys and do all the things that they love, then you're going to get up every day and go power washing.
And enjoy it because you're thinking of how productive you are and you're controlling your destiny.
Yeah.
And power washing, the process of pulling the trigger and having high pressure water come out is not your life. It's the process of I'm deciding to make something better for somebody that needs it at a more efficient manner than anybody else can do it. And that is fulfilling. Mm-hmm. It's not the act that's fulfilling. It's the result, right?
And that's how we feel. I'm sure that, Chris, that's how you feel in your work. It's like that's what keeps us coming back is that satisfaction, in my opinion, is that we often have people, if not all the time, they leave our office just feeling so relieved. So,
yeah.
Because they come in just this bundle of nervousness and stress. They don't know what their options are or what to do or how to do it, but we do.
Well, and there's a peace that comes when it's done, right?
Exactly
when
right.
You've made the appointment and, you know, I've been through it with you guys. And yeah, I feel better knowing that if I were to be gone, leaving this room, and then all of a sudden I'm gone, things are taken care of. You know, that's a load off me.
Yeah.
Or if, hey, I worked a really good week, I made a really good paycheck this week, that you go, you carry that feeling with you into life, into your recreational life. And so that's more fulfilling too.
And
so,
it does start with a paycheck and it needs to, the numbers need to match. You need to be able to provide for your family. But then it gets to, all right, I got the paycheck down. Now, am I doing as good as I can in this position? And I think that's where the aptitude test comes in that Adam likes so much is, am I getting satisfaction because I'm actually growing as a person and doing something that is leaving at the end of the day with satisfaction that I provided something good for the world, for somebody else. And it doesn't matter what that thing is, that feeling of satisfaction comes back. I mean, I've helped people clean up houses with cat pee and nasty trash all over the place. That's the last place I want to be. But when I walk out and that person has a little bit better position in life, I feel good.
Right.
Cleaning up cat pee made me feel good. How is that possible? And that's careers as well.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
I think going back to the loan forgiveness, I think that's one of the dangers of thinking that those things can just go away, that you can still get what you want, but that's not have to pay for it, not have to work for it, not have to, you know, I think it just has more value if, you know, do you know how hard I worked to get this degree? Do you know how hard I worked after my degree to pay off my degree? There, when you have loan for that, all goes away when that's all quote unquote forgiven. It's like, okay, it's just, I've got my degree now. And, but I think having those responsibilities, having that burden, when you walk around with, I think you need to have some burden. You have to have some, something that you're carrying. Otherwise it, what you're trying to achieve doesn't, just doesn't have the value. You know, there's a value in sweating and working hard and getting it done and early mornings working. I have a daughter who goes in at 6 a.m. and glazes donuts. That's her job. You know,
where, what donut
up, up in Utah? No, up in Utah, this bakery, you know, and she's never been a morning person. She's the antithesis of a morning person. She's an afternoon, evening person. But when I talk to her, she's thrilled at this newfound morning life, you know, that she can get up. She glazes these donuts. She makes a really good paycheck doing that. It's not anything that she, well, I want to glaze donuts when I grow up, but it's just a tool to get her where she wants to be. And, but she's finding in that process, she's finding a lot of joy. She's finding a lot of fun. She's working with new people. She's loving that by, she works till about 9 or 10, then she goes to school from about 11 to 3, and then she's done. You know, she goes to the gym and she goes home and the rest of the day is hers. And she loves that. Not having, you know, all that stuff looming over your head.
Yeah.
When you have that. So
late at night, having to still drag away and get the, the monotony done.
Yeah. She, so she's found a part of herself that she never would have found. I don't know if it'll stick 100%, but you know, it may set her on a path where her life is a little bit different because she's used to getting up early and leaving the house when it's dark and working and get, at the end of it, getting a paycheck.
Well, yeah, there's an interesting lesson that I recently took away from the parable of the 10 virgins in the Bible, where Jesus talks about 10 virgins waiting for the wedding. And the just to bring everybody up to speed, the basic story is there's 10 of these virgins and they have these lamps, and they're waiting for the bridegroom, who knows when the bridegroom is going to come. And when he comes, it happens to be in the middle of the night, and there are 5 who are wise, who have their lamps already filled and prepped, and there are 5 that don't have their lamps filled, and they ask the others to lend them some of their oil. And they say, no, we can't, because if we do, we won't have enough. And the 5 that have enough, they go in, they have their lamps lit, and they get led into the wedding, and all is well. Those who go into town and buy oil or try to make up for it after the fact get to the wedding, and it's too late, and they're not allowed to get in. And I thought, okay, what am I supposed to take away from this? Like, what's with these 10 virgins? The idea is the 10 virgins were all people striving for something good. They all pointed in the right direction. The oil is the focus of the story. The oil is what allowed the 5 that were wise to get in and prevented the 5 that were unwise from getting in. And so why couldn't they just go get that oil in from a merchant in that one night. And the reason was because the oil is character. The oil is who you are, who you have developed into over the course of your life. It's added into these lamps one drop at a time. So each job experience that you have, that's a drop of oil. Each course that you pass in school, that's a drop of oil. Each act of charity that you do for another person, that's a drop of oil. And it's kind of like an Olympic athlete that can say, this is how you do what I do, but you're going to have to add those drops of oil one day at a time, 1,000 of them, until you fill your lamp. I can't possibly give you my skill set. And that is what we're trying to give to our children, is full lamps to go out, or at least the understanding that the purpose of life is to fill our lamps, and it happens one day at a time, glazing donuts at 6 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah. No, it all goes to build the life that you want, right? And that never comes free. That's just the fact of it. I can't just get up today and decide I'm going to be a marathon runner.
Right.
You know, it starts with running down the block, and then it starts with running a 3K, and then a 5K, and a 10K. All of these things I will never do.
Sounds horrible.
Because I don't want to run. Sounds but absolutely you horrible. Can't just take somebody who's never run and convert them to a marathon runner. So I don't think you can take someone who never paid for their education and convert them to a productive member of society, because you've stripped them of that responsibility, that accountability. You've removed it. And that's a big one. You know, that's a big one. It's the biggest debt they'll probably get into other than their home. Mm-hmm. Again, we can have a discussion all day long about why it's so expensive, and that's probably a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, you didn't go in blind. You knew what this was going to cost. You knew what you wanted to achieve. You signed on the line. You got to do it.
And just to dip my toe into how the problem was created, government involvement in backing student loans, that there's a direct correlation in between how much tuition was and the government involvement in backing those student loans. Tuition shot up astronomically when the government got involved, saying, yeah, we're going to back these student loans. And so the institutions are like, okay, well then, great, we're going to charge higher for our tuition, and lending institutions that have these government-backed loans are going to lend more money. It was the same thing that got us into the subprime lending crisis in, you know, the 2000s. It's when people that aren't qualified to buy the size of house that they're buying are allowed to do it because they're not vetted properly and they don't look at the big picture. And the government got involved there, and it caused the problem. And then the government tried to get involved and solve the problem by putting a moratorium on foreclosures. And so what happened was entire neighborhoods that were built with these subprime loan money that were nice neighborhoods, some people were paying for them. Others were allowed to live in them without the fear of foreclosure because the government says, we got to put a moratorium on this. They know they're not going to continue owning that house. And so the lawn dies, the trees die, all the fixtures get torn off the walls. And before they leave that house, it's a skeleton, and the whole value of the neighborhood has gone down. Why? Because again, the government has gotten involved. And the theme of the story is anything that the government touches, it really goes to crap. Mm-hmm. And so keep the government out, let the free market adjust. And schools, if they're successful because they produce students that can pay back their loans, great, let them continue. Schools that just teach philosophical concepts that don't actually produce it back into society the way others will pay for it, then maybe they need to shrink down a little bit into a size that will contribute to the level that they're, I don't know, sustainable.
Yeah, absolutely. It all just comes down to risk versus reward, right? As soon as you remove all the risk, well, then I'm jumping in.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So the universities, the risk that these loans wouldn't get paid back was removed.
Right.
Government's going to cover it. So they're getting paid no matter what. So let's raise it, you know? And then the students that think that it's going to be forgiven, well, maybe they don't make the best choice on where to go or how much to borrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
what major?
Or what major? Just because, yeah, exactly. It's, you know, it's just going to school. Like, you know, nothing's really expected of me. I'm a student. So you can kind of live this kind of pseudo fake life.
Yeah.
As a student,
you can go out and eat out at restaurants each night as you study.
Right.
And instead of eating top ramen and, you know, potatoes.
I can't do that. Oh, well, where's Chris? Oh, well, he's reading for 12 hours straight, you know? Well, but isn't he an architect? Yeah. But he's reading about the Roman Empire for 12 hours straight, writing a paper on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you're a student, you know, where's Chris the student? Oh, he's writing a paper on the Roman Empire. We won't see him for 3 days. Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. With being a student is kind of this, there's that shelter of not much is expected of me right now. Expect huge things from me in the future. But right now I kind of, live off the grid.
And again, it comes with the accountability and the pride of your workmanship is where you really make a good career. You make goods and services that not only other people want, but that you can go home feeling satisfied providing. And something that I see in my kids, we, for better or for worse, raise chickens, right? And it's kind of the bane of my existence, but I spend most weekends figuring out how to keep these chickens alive. But I remember as a kid, we didn't raise.
Maybe you should have gone to school for it.
Yeah, exactly. we would buy a dozen eggs would be so cheap. A dozen eggs was like $1, you know, as a kid. And so what would we do with those eggs? We'd chuck them at people, cars, houses, but we would throw them, right? With no remorse. And so James, my son, he's the one that is probably the most consistent in going out and collecting these chicken eggs. And he dropped the bucket one time. And I don't know how every single one of those eggs broke. Like, how many times did you drop that bucket? You know, there's like 20 eggs in there. Every single one is broken. But he dropped the bucket. And he was pretty distraught about it. And he came to us and fighting back tears a little bit. And he was like, on the way home, I dropped the bucket and, you know, the eggs are broken. And that was a haul for one day of eggs. And we get to use a portion of the eggs and whatever's left over. He goes around the neighborhood and he sells and makes him a little extra money. But he really felt bad about that. Whereas me, I chucked those eggs as a kid. Whereas him, that was a big loss for him. And that's the difference. Because he put in the time of going, feeding the chickens, helping me protect them from the predators, keeping them alive, and then collecting the fruit of his labors.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that risk versus reward. If it's not there, you know, it's the reward isn't as great. You know, the higher the risk, the higher the reward. You know, so if those eggs just showed up and he didn't have to go work to get them, he wouldn't have cared if the bucket broke. Yeah, whatever. New eggs will show up tomorrow. You know, so, but yeah, it's important to, accountability is completely, that's what makes us do what we do, right? Accountable to my kids. I'm accountable to my wife. I'm accountable to my work. I'm accountable to my debts. You know, those are.
To God.
To God. Yeah. So that's, didn't forget it. Oh, okay.
It's like ASU. They're on the same level.
I did forget ASU. I think God did too. But the, if you're not accountable for anything, you know, it's like that student, you know, invisible Harry Potter cloak. You know, if you're not accountable, if you can just hide out as a student and never get into life, then you're not going to get that reward. It's just not going to be there.
I have we're out of time. And maybe this question is for another episode, but I want to know, you're talking about accountability.
Mm-hmm.
That comes from, I would say, emotional sophistication to the extent that I think it's our natural human tendency to say, to deny or to be in denial about things. Meaning, James was given the assignment to go get those eggs. He went and got them. Somehow, they all got broken. He dropped them, whatever. It could have been easy for James to say, but it's not my fault because I tripped over the sidewalk, and the sidewalk shouldn't have been like that. Mm. It's the sidewalks. That's a very, in my opinion, that's the first inclination is you don't look at yourself. It's not your problem. It's not because I did something. It was because somebody else, an exterior factor. So how do you get to the point where it's like self-reflective first? Mm-hmm. What did I do wrong first before I start blaming others or circumstances around me?
Mm-hmm. That only comes with maturity.
Christopher, you are so wise. Thank you for coming back time and time again.
I did not go to ASU.
What's that supposed to mean?
I'm just, maybe that's the experiential benefit that I have.
Have you ever noticed how everybody makes fun of our ASU, like late night shows, they'll make fun of ASU, Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I take that as a badge of honor.
A badge of honor.
Yeah.
That you're made fun of.
Jealous.
Yeah. Could be.
Nobody talks about U of A.
You can continue to think that.
Okay. I will.
Go Cats.
Go Devils.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.